Okay, ready? Everybody settle and action.
Warning, Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended,
you're one ugly motherfucker. Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, that's great. That's just fucking great, man.
It rubs the lotion on its skin. It doesn't even have any
control. I'm mostly coming out. Most of all.
There are
Short round.
Short round.
So I still don't have an intro or a title for any of this other than movie ramblings. So that's how we're going to start this episode as well. I have David here with me.
Hello.
And Michael, the nerds of film theory of the network in here to do what we did last time, which is discuss abstract concepts that we usually end up leaving in the break room kitchen area and don't end up on an episode, but it honestly entertain me. And so maybe this is a little self gratification, but either way,
maybe the title should be Everything But the Kitchen Sink.
There you go.
There you go. There you go. We just came up with the title, second episode in. There we go. So this is Everything But the Kitchen Sink, unless that's TM'd somewhere already.
Theories, ramblings, and depression. That's the
it's just like
title.
Alcohol and coffee. Like that's
our
just philosophy cigarette
corner.
Smoke filling the air, you know. Is it bad that sounds really nice to me?
Yeah.
Okay. So the previous discussion about Wicked being the potential patient zero of the counter narrative movement that we seem to be stuck in, like a fly in flypaper on the wall, is led to this other comment by a listener who said they'd love to hear our thoughts or our take on why there aren't original film concepts anymore. For example, some of my foundational movies are Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. They spawned franchises, but they were not based on existing books, shows, or movies. This was brought to us by listener DTM33. And this is a concept that, honestly, I think we've all talked about a lot over the years, but it's one that has, I believe, and I think everyone here will at least agree on this statement, a litany of reasons as to why that is. The world of Hollywood has shifted. It is undeniable looking at what's being made when things that seem like a guaranteed hit crash and burn, and then like Minecraft goes and makes $1 billion. And the just what seems to be steadfast refusal to make changes to walking down a plank into a pit of spikes that seems to be the business model for a lot of different studios these days. Looking at Snow White, the entire last run of DC movies that, had they not been tax and legally liable to release, they probably wouldn't have. But one of there's a lot of different things. And I think one of the main things that, as far as a source as to why this has happened, I couldn't necessarily tell you that, but that's what this discussion is about, is that there seems to have been a shift where back in the day, world experiences would lead to a concept or what would essentially become the intellectual property.
Historical inspiration.
Right. And this is something
life
that
experience.
Vince Vaughn has said on an interview previously, that back in the day, you know, turning 16 was the IP concept. Or what if I could go back to a fraternity in my 30s? And these different ideas based on world experiences. What if someone was 40 years old and still a virgin? That was the quote IP. Now we have a world in which it needs an existing IP or an existing fandom to get greenlit. And that's why we're seeing things like Battleship become a fucking blockbuster movie. And Minecraft is an example of that. And so many other, I mean, there was talk about like a Monopoly movie at one point and all kinds of other random shit that someone somewhere got it in their mind that you need an existing fandom or group of people to like buoy the idea into something that would guarantee success.
So that, yes. Now, just to go back a bit to like 1930s cinema, the golden age of cinema, they too adapted a lot. In fact, early films were adapted. They were adapted through literature.
Yes.
A lot of books.
A lot of books became those movies.
And the reasoning for that is much like the reasoning of the pre-diarrhea of sequels and remakes.
It's like PD, like BC and
that's
shit.
That's an actual thesis. That's part of my dissertation.
Yes.
Pre-diarrhea.
Pre-diarrhea.
What was I saying?
Back in the day, they adapted a lot of stuff from books and literature.
Yeah. So it's not a new concept. And the reason why they were doing it is largely due to hoping that what they're adapting, people are aware of what it is.
Yeah.
So hoping that the movie that's costing millions of dollars to make, or hundreds of thousands back in the 1930s and 40s, people will go see it because, oh, the book. It was marketing something that people are familiar with. And that's why we saw the rise of sequels in the 80s and 90s and then reboots in the late 90s and early 2000s. But since then, I think we can all agree that it's kind of much more than that.
Oh, yeah. You have to throw in the fact about how the medium also changed at that point, because just like you alluded to, it started with books and then it went to film. Or it then went to television.
Right.
And two separate sources of mediums now, basically back then, that transitioned over or combined as one. Technically, people have been saying you can see that today with how people see video games. And that is still considered like a separate medium from film.
Mm-hmm.
However, it bleeds in. That's why Minecraft exploded the way it did, is because it has such a large following worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think film is like, I mean, what's the phrase? Like politics is downstream or entertainment is downstream of politics or something like that.
Yeah.
Film is downstream of
culture
and what people are doing. In the 30s and all that, when film was new, when sound was a holy God, it's brand fucking new. We can hear. There was adaptations of novels because everyone knew novels.
Mm-hmm.
As time went on, we are now adapting. There was a period where we're adapting TV shows. There's the TV shows. Now it's the movie. There was a whole bit where there was like the movie was the subtitle, you know, South Park, the movie. Jay and Silent Bob. Well, that wasn't a movie. That was, I'm thinking of Beavis and Butthead and shit like that.
There you go, Beavis and Butthead, yeah.
We are now seeing the adaptation of video games because that's what the younger culture has been primarily doing. They're aware of video games. Like back in the 30s, they were aware of the novels and that's what they were fans of and loved before. And now they're bringing that in. I've said for years that video games is the next big thing after the superhero genre finally sputters and dies its last. You know, aching breath, which depending on the year could be within a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I think that's one part of it, certainly. The other element is that the movies themselves.
Are we talking about the current time that we're in?
Yeah.
Specifically? Okay.
Yeah, kind of, right. So things you have always been kind of recycled, whether it's an adaptation of a book. Or you didn't realize that A Star is Born is like the fourth remake of A Star is Born.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, we didn't have the cultural memory that we do now. What came out in the 30s, someone who was born in the 70s probably wouldn't have known unless it was something massive like Gone with the Wind. You could get away with adapting it because people didn't remember that it came out previously. The age of the internet has helped us remember things in a more and more tightly wound cyclical circle, like an Ouroboros chasing and eating its own tail. We remember things.
You say snake. Mm-hmm. I say human centipede.
There you go.
Sure. Tomato, tomato.
Well, that just more clearly
paints that graphic image.
What's happening currently. That it's not
one person eats,
yes,
and then diarrhea comes out. And then it continues and gets worse and worse until someone dies.
Human centipedism is what we're going to call this era.
But it's one of those things where, like, for example, in this list, Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is like an original IP, but it is based on adventure serials from way back in the day. What, like the 20s, 30s?
30s. Around the 30s and 40s.
It's inspired by that content. And that concept, Star Wars, is inspired by things like the Foundation trilogy by Isaac Asimov and various other sources. The hero's journey is a quintessential story, so we just kind of adapt that to some other framework, some setting, and that's where we get a concept. But we now seem to be too aware of what happened previously. I think people like George Lucas, when they did a Raiders, got away, quote, with it because of two things. One, people didn't remember a lot of those serial adventures back in the 30s when the movie came out in 81.
Uh-huh.
And two, he had enough creativity and life experiences to make something new and original, at least new enough, based on the trappings or the set dressing of something that had came prior. And now we have worlds in which people are inspired. The people who are making content today were inspired by stuff we still remember. It's not no one remembers Star Wars from the 70s. Everyone remembers Star Wars. Everyone has grown up on Star Wars.
Yeah.
Someone's going to be inspired by and create their own Star Wars, and that's how you get Rebel Moon. And if you subtract creativity
you get
or at least competency, and I think that's the second prong of this trident in many ways, or what soon might be a candelabra, the fact that people, it's very hard to make something good. Competency is paramount. Well, go ahead.
Let me throw another obstacle at you, Thomas, because Harlan Ellison writes, "For let us face the sad but omnipresent fact, most people of maturity of substantial age in our culture are crotchety hearkeners of their lost youth." That's his take on the problem with nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Nostalgia also plays a key part in what's happening in today's current climate in terms of film.
Mm-hmm.
People are obsessed with their so-called youth, which they don't remember correctly.
No one does.
There's been numerous studies done that people tend to idealize their youth.
Yeah.
Even if they had a bad youth, they idealize the things that they grew up with. And that is now being infused into cultural products like films or cultural artifacts like film. So nostalgia is another aspect of that I would say is a whole other category as to why we are getting things that are half-assed duplicates of things we've seen before.
Well, also going on that point, you know, more recently, there is a movement where basically people have looked at old films. I happen to be one of them who appraise and glorify bad films. And
crazy.
For like film historians, well, that's nuts.
No, I'm just being bad films in
they
what
have
way?
Their place.
Let's because if you're talking
Cyborg.
Yeah, shit, that's not. Those aren't movies. those are dumpster fires.
But if you think about
it. I get what you're saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, but if you think about it, those dumpster fires are glorified by a larger audience nowadays.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are our future filmmakers. Those are our future idea makers. And they look at that and go, well, if I like that, then that's going to inspire me.
Okay. So now if we go back to the 1980s, 1990s, Thomas, as we're talking about Indiana Jones, Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, those films I would categorize largely as postmodern works. Okay. So let's just, for the sake of argument, you can disagree in a moment.
Okay.
In a lot of ways, nostalgia is the root, and postmodernism or metamodernism, if you want to call this new era we're in, is the disease.
There you go.
So, I mean, there's different ways to look at this. Nostalgia, I think, is worthy of a deeper dive into that at a later date, possibly. Mm-hmm. But that also is a big factor in what we're seeing. While contemporary cinema is often criticized, you know, for over-relying on intellectual properties, video games, comic books, sequels, Barbie, reboots, remakes, yes. The films of the so-called original era, we call them original films, but they're also, again, if you're looking at this through the postmodern lens, they're not necessarily original. They are postmodern pastiches.
There you go.
They're mosaics. Mm-hmm. People are taking things that they've seen in the past. Even if it's subconscious, they're pulling things and remixing it to create something.
Well, and I think that's where we come to that idea of competency, right? Everyone's inspired by stuff they grew up with or saw or experienced. And you go into Kurt Vonnegut's There's Only Eight Stories concept, but
mono theory.
Getting away from that. We're all inspired by stuff we grew up with or experienced. We get ideas and they fill the bucket, and then we create our own take on a different, on an amalgamation of these concepts. Theoretically, that's what Rebel Moon was going to be had Zack Snyder been able to pull it off, right?
Yeah.
It's an idea bucket of all these different things that came together to create something theoretically new and original. Competency is where that falls apart. It is very, very hard to do something well. And I use the Ghostbusters example as one that I tout that script quite a lot, where almost every single line is absolutely necessary to advance the plot as well as develop the characters. There's not a bit of it that's wasted that doesn't tell you more about the world, more about the plot, or more about the characters. Mm-hmm. Movies today don't quite do that. There's a lot of ancillary shit. There's a lot of scenes that could be cut that add absolutely nothing to one or any of those categories. It's a lot harder to do storytelling or anything well. Anybody can cook ramen. That doesn't mean everyone can make, you know, a Michelin star restaurant level meal.
Yeah.
And as the demand for more increased with the advancement of technology, primarily streaming, the barrier for entry dropped significantly. And this is one of the things that from one of my writing teachers I had heard about, is that in the worst of times, the best writers are the ones who write. In the worst of times, because they're the ones who are good enough to get a job still.
Yes.
In the best of times, you will get the worst of content because everyone is getting hired. So there's a lower barrier to entry. So a lot more is coming out. As Netflix was strip mined for content when every other studio wanted their own streaming platform, everyone now had to make 10, 20, 30, 40, 500 shows to fill their buckets. And as that cost increased, you then have to depend more on things being a sure thing. And I think that's why we start to see some of these. It has to be something with a built-in audience. I had heard before from prospective writers that one of the things they ask you, not about just the quality of your book, I'm talking just novels, is what is your social media presence? What is your platform? How many people do you already have?
How many followers?
Looking at you already. There's this element of needing attention from the world in order to justify an investment, because now we do have these metrics and data to show that so many people are watching this kind of show with this kind of actor at this amount of runtime. So we engineer something to fit that. And it's no longer a creatively inspired concept, even if it is based on something previous or twisted just enough, like an Indiana Jones. It is just almost an algorithm to create something that should be a surefire hit. That's why we get Citadel. That is mathematically supposed to work. But art and human creativity and subjectivity is not math.
So you're saying that because the barriers to entry have been drastically lowered because of media convergence, which democratizes media in general, media creation, more people can get involved with it. But those people that now have access don't necessarily know exactly what they're doing. So you still have studios doing what studios have done since the dawn of film and cinema, where they're running, you know, their calculations on what can work. Now, of course, it's more formalized, more streamlined.
laser focus.
But the difference is they're handing this data sheet to these filmmakers and say, I need you to follow X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I don't know what X, Y, and Z is. Well, good luck.
Well, and that's the thing. Yes. Is
is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes. That's part of it. Yes. Is that they know what it should work mathematically, but they're giving it to people who don't have the skill set, the competency to do something like that. If you tell Aaron Sorkin, make this amazing, you know, drama that's an ensemble cast built on modern day issues, he's going to be able to do that. But will he creatively want to do that or make his own spin? Maybe not. But if you hand that to someone else who's only ever done a couple of shows on a CW network level and say, you have to now showrun because we have needs for content.
I'll take it even.
That's jumping into a pool you are not equipped to deal with. So I think there's that. There's a lot of people who have been put into positions that expects or demands a lot more of them. And we as an audience who are more, on average, I would say, I hate the phrase, media literate, we know a lot more about pop culture, media, movies, storytelling, because it's regurgitated everywhere. It's a lot harder to make everyone happy some degree, too.
Take it even further, Thomas. I mean, like, it's not the fact that it's the influx of media that is causing, like, this kind of growth of lack of talent that you're seeing a lot of creators.
Lack of talent. It's like if you have to harvest all the vegetables that you grew because demand is so high, you're going to get the like not so good and the uglies. So and this one's not quite ready, but fuck it. Someone will buy it. Mm-hmm. And you're going to throw that in. Whereas back in the day, it had to be people who could actually do the job.
A bunch of green bananas, basically, green bananas. Are for sale.
There's a lot of green bananas.
I'm trying to dig through that bundle, mm-hmm. looking for that one yellow one, and all I find is a black one at the bottom.
But take it even further is kind of like there. Nowadays, there is not an emphasis, and I'm interested to see what Mike thinks about this, because this is something that I've been actually thinking about for a very long time.
I need time to prepare to answer, though.
Yeah.
About 2 weeks.
2 weeks. But, like, the emphasis on film school. Say, for example, there's not a lot of students out there anymore who actually look at the quote-unquote game and know what they're doing. They only focus on one tiny thing, whether it's they want to be a director, so they focus on just being a director. Back in the day, film school was you learn everything.
Now that goes to a whole other issue, and I'll touch on it really quick. That goes hand in hand with the changing course of universities. They have moved towards specialized fields rather than catch-all fields.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go into philosophy, you're going to film, or you go into the sciences, you now specialize. There used to be people who just knew things. When you were a philosopher, you knew the history of philosophy.
Yeah.
When you went into film, you knew the history of film. Now, because of the way these colleges are reorganizing themselves, they push more specialized fields. So you have people that may know one distinct thing, if that.
Yeah.
You also have the greatest mistake of all time, and I want to get off this topic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No problem.
Of Quentin Tarantino, who made it a form of pride to go around telling people in the late 90s, you don't need to go to film school.
Exactly.
I'm like, well, if you're Quentin Tarantino, who's literally a certified genius, then yeah,
possibly on the spectrum.
Then you probably don't need to go to film school. But if you're a moron like me, then you better go.
Exactly. And that's the thing, even like when you're, well, when you're talking about the big, like, the quality.
The big fucking asterisk that's missing from Tarantino's statement is you don't need to go to film school, comma, if you absolutely obsess, spend every waking minute and learn every single thing you can about film on your own dime.
Right.
But if you just think, fuck it, I can do it, I don't need school, there's going to be a lot of pitfalls along the path there. But I think it's a couple of things. So I think it's the competency is another element. There's too much being demanded. We're starting to see that shift because their studios are spending so much money to keep these platforms afloat. Apple TV hasn't made a dime in years since its inception. They don't care because they're bigger than most countries. But these other studios have all realized, oh, we were making less money now than when Netflix was giving us a chunk. Because now we have to support all of this stuff. And with every bomb and failed show that gets cut after a season and a half, you then have more and more baggage on the books. And I think part of that leads into another element, which is the astronomical costs of making movies in the modern day. Part of this, I think, is because of just sheer bloody ineptitude, as we've talked about previously, where the people who are in charge now did not learn or were not properly mentored by the people who came before. There's a lot of that in a lot of industries where mentors, the people who built the company, who know the way things are, who went through all the trials and tribulations, for whatever reason, do not accurately teach the incoming wave of people who they have to hand the baton to. And so there's these people who come in with this mindset of, we're going to make it our own, we're going to do it our own, we're going to change things. And they don't understand why things were the way they were. Not saying that things can't ever change, but there's also a reason or a method to the madness that has been earned over painstaking years that I think Hollywood is very much a victim of when it comes to some of these outlandish budgets. Because of this and those costs, because you don't have a script, but you know you need a plan, a Marvel sheet of 17 movies, yes, half of which are going to get cut, delayed, or postponed, you know you need stuff before you know what you need. And then they start greenlighting these things. And then you end up with shooting Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness for 2 weeks before you even have a script. And you end up doing complete reshoots of Captain America where it's a disaster. Or Snow White sits on the shelf because you're trying to avoid having to release it. Or Batgirl gets cut entirely, even though it's in post.
Okay, so you touched on something that we can throw in another idea here that goes right with what you're talking about. So you bring up Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why Snow White sucked, quite frankly, is because they didn't want to actually use the source material.
Right. Yes.
Because
zero respect for it.
Because their view is that it's ideologically wrong.
Right.
Yes.
So, which is insane.
When you look at Indiana Jones, Ghostbusters, let's just focus on just Indiana Jones. You go into critical thought, critical thoughts meaning things that have been written about Indiana Jones. It is largely considered a colonial film.
Yes.
It's upsetting, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
So that's the reason why the last two Indiana Jones films had to pivot and go into areas that Indiana Jones doesn't really vibe with based on what Indiana Jones is.
Yes.
Even though the latest Indiana Jones film was pretty good, it still was very different in terms of content.
Yes.
Than the previous three films, the prior three films. Look at Back to the Future, as well as Indiana Jones now, and look at the Reagan era aesthetic that's encompassing those films. A lot of our favorite films from the 80s, not the 70s and 90s, were brought up within the Reagan ideological mindset.
Yeah.
And the people who are making films today in Hollywood despise Reagan. You're asking people to do films how they did them before, but ideologically it contradicts with the views of the people making these cultural commodities currently.
And then what you end up doing is basically kind of like what Indiana Jones did toward the end, where I enjoyed Dial of Destiny, but it was like, you could tell that what they were trying to do was push the character of Indiana Jones aside.
But so yeah, like, absolutely
get him out.
And that's one of those things. It's like they want the built-in IP, but they also want to fundamentally change everything about it because of a modern day mindset, which comes from some, to get too political, but some heinous stuff that had come to light and a cultural shift as a result. So there's this new idea of we need to burn everything to the ground because it's built on a throne of lies kind of thing. So what was these innocent, to some degree, you know, like these innocent movies that didn't do anything wrong, the concept, Indiana Jones, the movie didn't do fuck, but because there's this new mindset shift, it is no longer a appealing taste to those in power who already feel the need to change things as they get into a position that I don't think all of them are fully equipped to deal with. And so then they wonder why things aren't working. Meanwhile, when you actually adapt something and stick pretty damn close to it of something that people have expressed interest in, Super Mario Brothers, Minecraft, you start to get financial returns. Look at that. That's shocking. But I think that's part of it, is they don't know what to do and they don't want to stick to what worked to some degree, as you said, Mike. Yeah,
they want to shun it.
Yeah.
And some of them, or they want to shun what made it whole.
Right.
And they want to take the fragments and try to say, we're doing it too. But you can't make a whole with fragments.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's not to say that movies of the 80s and 90s were, you know, infallible. Like I saw Air Force One with Harrison Ford a couple of years ago for the first time. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. Yes. This is very much of the time. And that's another thing. Like, we've moved on as a culture, as a society. The more that the internet has become a part of our lives, I've said this to other people, I don't think that politics and politicians of today are more evil than they were ever before. I think we are more aware. There's more ways to get caught with cameras and tapes and phones everywhere and text messages that go off to parties unknown. They're not as good at hiding it because it's so much harder to hide stuff. We lost our mind as a country when Nixon and Watergate broke. If you think that was the first time something naughty happened.
Oh, yeah.
Like, come on.
That's kid stuff.
That's kid stuff now. They'd walk that off in an afternoon on CNN.
Yeah.
Like, that's a nothing now. But today, we are so jaded by the world we live in for what we were pitched in the 80s and 90s as children growing up. And now what we've gotten in the 2020s, wildly different. So it's like people who are in charge don't like what came before and want to fundamentally change it. They're hiring people who aren't equipped with the skill set because they need the demand. They're paying so much more for these movies that are having $400, $500, $600 million budgets that have to make more money than countries in order to break even.
Yes.
That's not a sustainable business model. And so if you need to make $2 billion on this movie, at least one, you're not going to risk it on someone's original idea. You're going to be like, okay, that's a cute idea. What IP can we tie this to? And that's why you get Until Dawn, the movie that has absolutely fuck to do with the game.
Yeah.
Other than the title.
Let's look at a recent video game and try to see video game adaptation. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of talk about, what's that show I don't like?
The Last of Us.
Yeah. You're talking about people who aren't adapting things correctly, but the TV show is being hated
for adapting it too correctly,
for adapting it perfectly. Hmm. So how do we justify that then?
Well, here's the worm in the apple is sometimes a bad idea is just bad.
and that's what I was about to say.
And that's one of those things is that they're not like to make a movie comparison. Cause I know you're not as well versed on some of the video game controversies, but that's like, you know, The Last of Us 2 was such a landmine of a bad idea that blew up so poorly.
You're talking about the game itself?
The game itself. The game of Last of Us 2 was the Highlander 2 of video games.
Yeah.
Where wow. It's like, how did you go that fucking wrong?
That's quite the statement.
And because it sold less than half of what it had sold previously.
And you're talking to two video gamers.
It is almost universally hated, yes. And those who claim to love it
are
fighting uphill on is a challenge at the least. It is the wrong thing to have done. It's one of those where if you were going to finally stick to the source material as close as you can, you bet on the one horse with syphilis, like, yes, that is going to have an aneurysm later in the race.
That's the wrong
because the first IP season is based on the first game, and that did gangbusters.
Yeah, because the first game was written well. The problem was once you get to the second game, you begin to see that
there was a massive problem.
Yeah, because the writer bungled it, which is normal. I mean, like, no writer is perfect.
Well, there's not being perfect, and there's fuck up Royal.
And he fucked up Royal with his story.
And I think that's one of those things is that their only options were stick to the adaptation and get hate, or adapt it and get a different kind, or change it and get a different kind of hate.
Because I'm even trying to think of a successful adaptation of a video game that was basically from start to finish a perfect adaptation, and it turned out well.
Oh, well, I think recently you have like Super Mario Brothers.
Jesus, Dave, right in the microphone.
Ow. I'm sorry.
Right.
That came out of nowhere.
Or what are you, new?
Super Mario Brothers, the movie, I think is a great example of that, where it looks exactly like it.
Yeah.
The characters, while I don't agree with all the voice acting decisions and the hiring behind the casts there, it works just fine. It hits all the marks. It knows all the stuff. It knows the source material. It sticks to the aesthetic. And it nails that for the most part. While Sonic the Hedgehog, I'm not familiar enough with to say if it's accurate.
No,
it's they at not. Least got the the creature Sonic to look right.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people like Jim Carrey's evolution as Eggman.
Yeah.
And they got that part right. Last of Us Season 1 was done right. Minecraft, despite its narrative issues, nails the aesthetic.
Nails the aesthetic.
And frankly, yeah. Fuck the narrative, because Minecraft has no narrative.
There is none.
You couldn't have fucked that up if you tried. It's who gives a shit, right?
How does that idea then, the fact that The Last of Us Season 2 was adapted or is being adapted pretty much one-to-one,
mm-hmm.
How does that complicate our understanding then of originality, adaptation, and cultural recycling in popular filmmaking? Do we have an answer for that?
What do you mean exactly?
So if our problems mm-hmm. are with this current postmodern or meta-modern era we're in, mm-hmm. where we're getting a lot of half-assed duplicates,
right?
Because the original question you pose at the top of the show is, how come things in the late 70s, 80s and 90s worked so well? They were original, air quotes, not really, but let's say they are for the sake of argument.
Creative enough, original creations enough.
So how do we factor in something like The Last of Us then into that equation? If our problem is that things are not being adapted correctly.
Because the source, the bone marrow is rotten on The Last of Us Part 2, which is what we're seeing in Season 2. It is adapting something that itself,
was
like
bad.
The Last Jedi, spits in the face of, is so postmodern that it hates everything that came before, including its own first installment.
So something like this, like Last of Us, probably could have worked out better if it went by the general idea that I prefer when adapting anything. As long as you understand the source, the heart of the source, you can fuck around with it.
That's where they should have made the change with Season 2 of going different than the game. The game, people have had thousands of arguments over this game. Like, this is, for video games, this is a Last Jedi level discussion that was for movies.
Bigger, yeah.
The fact is, there's not a bad concept buried within the narrative. It's just that it's executed horrifically for shock value.
Yeah.
And because they had an opportunity to adapt and change, it's the one time they should have taken it, they didn't.
So this is an outlier.
Right? It is an outlier. That's part of the problem is that it is such an outlier. It should be removed from the data set.
And our conversation.
Essentially. So that's the thing. It's so why are things not original now? I think there's a lack of competency so that they don't even realize that they're making lazy content. Some degree, like you said before, like postmodernists, like you take from various different sources and you make something your own. And we said that's kind of what Zack Snyder's, in theory, Rebel Moon would have been, is taking from various different sources and making something his own. But the competency wasn't there. And we're seeing that on a wide scale, I think, because everyone's needing content. So much more people can get in or have gotten in that don't have haven't cut their teeth, as they say. To learn these lessons.
To fully understand.
Right. The budgets therefore balloon. So therefore they need to make the money. So they go for something that has a guaranteed audience. So it's an adapting an IP. And the stuff that they get that is original is still malhandled or mishandled, because there's people who I don't think have the backgrounds to really do it. Or they set people up for failure. For example, using that Until Dawn example, David F. Sandberg, the director behind that, started with this little YouTube short called Lights Out. It's a little horror video. It's a couple of minutes. It's a unique idea and it's fun. That got him an adaptation where he got to do a full length feature film version of it. And it's all right.
It's all right.
It does enough. It still plays on the concept, but it falls into a lot of horror tropes because a novel idea does not a script and movie make.
There you go.
But it got him a career. And so then he did Annabelle Creation. And then they put him, what they do a lot in Hollywood these days is, all right, you've done one successful indie film. Here's a multi-hundred million dollar superhero budget. Best of luck. That was The Eternals. That was the Marvels, I should say. And he got Shazam and Shazam Fury of the Gods, which cratered. And instead of going to director jail, he's now back on Until Dawn. It's like they push people up because of the demand and need that they're just grabbing anyone who had anything successful.
Another
and
thing
promoting it.
That kind of, I think, goes with what you're saying, Thomas. That can also be a reason why we're not getting the works that we had gotten in years past. Even though these are similar strategies, because the stakes are so high. Because you're dealing with $400 million budgets, you're dealing with a streaming show that is costing them a lot of money with not a lot of return in sight. You have the input of a lot of studio heads.
Mm-hmm. More cooks in the kitchen.
And I want to say that this is something that I've been bringing up a lot in shows because it's just something I've been thinking about a lot in terms of authorship. I think more than ever, authorship is more contested. We don't know who's writing these Disney Marvel films, really.
No, because there's mandates from producers.
We don't know who's truly directing these movies. Okay, are you directing it like an old school television director, or are you directing this like an old school filmmaker?
Well, and we know that a lot of directors are essentially cast these days. They're picked for who they are, what they represent, not necessarily skill set. And the studio, and I think Disney is the biggest culprit of this right now, is the one making the creative, directorial, and writing decisions.
Yes.
And those studio heads you can't expect those guys to understand, unfortunately, the ins and outs of film.
But they don't. They're business people.
In years past, they might have. But now, because we're in specialized field, the specialized era, they know their business and they have a general understanding of film. But if they're sticking their dicks in all these projects, they are probably more or less the author. And there lies the contradictions, the problems with the films that aren't quite working. Because you have, on one hand, let's say the director who's working on the film does understand what he's doing.
Yeah.
But then you have the dick of the executive being placed inside. Yes.
Yes.
You like that metaphor? And we're getting a lot of just contradicting type of ideas thrown into something. You have one person working on an existential piece and you have the executive who's like, I don't know what existentialism is. You mean sadness? No,
no.
And that's why I have a problem with the recent announcement from Marvel. The director for Thunderbolts is being eyed for X-Men.
Automatically.
I'm like, dude, we're not supposed to be hiring directors based on their success rate.
And that's what we do.
The reason why Thunderbolts was so good was because the director had an understanding of existentialism. That's why Thunderbolts was appealing to me. That doesn't mean he's going to be able to do X-Men.
Exactly.
And that's the thing, is that we are casting directors. They have a good name. They have a good face. They represent this group that we're interested in promoting. Well, so we're going to hire them. That's why we have a special huge announcement about who's going to be directing the Rey movie, and we haven't heard about it in 5 years.
Yes. That's not happening.
Four, three, whatever the hell years. Because it's not happening. But that's that thing where
the biggest movie not happening.
The other element of this whole thing is the studio interference. And I think a lot of that does come from the shifted mindset of you're only going to get cookie cutter, hit certain marks things when you eliminate the ability to tell other types of stories.
For example, Steven Spielberg had complete creative control over Indiana Jones for those first three films. The fourth film, possibly, that's an outliner. Let's just forget about it. But the fifth film, you have...
It's Kathleen Kennedy's movie.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. And it's the fifth film's fine, but you have a director. I forget his name.
James Mangold.
He is a competent director.
So what happened?
He's not authoring it.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is that the more that you have to win the GDP of seven nations,
mm-hmm.
the more it has to be mathematically backed, which means they're only going to go with these IPs that they know. But if they also want to change these things, that's when you then result in, we can't tell certain stories, so we're going to shift this into something that no longer fundamentally works the same way as to what made it appealing in the past. And the need for... Damn it, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. I had it.
What right do you mean?
I know.
That's what happens when you're really, when you're trying to think about shit.
It was about the cost element too. So we already know that they're casting these directors, but if you're going to put all these eggs in this basket, what they start to lean then on is metrics. And that's where the internet has ruined so many things. And Mike, you and I had talked about this. I think you and I at least had before about how the algorithm recommends songs that are like this. So more songs that are like this are pushed. So therefore, more people think they need to make stuff like this. So that's what gets pushed farther in the algorithm. It's this Ouroboros homogeny where everything starts, the human centipede, where everything starts to become more like what exists because that's what's popular, because that's all that exists.
Yes.
And so we now have that when it comes to movies. That's why so many of them are interchangeable and have the same strong female character, does this, doesn't need no man, you know, like the template for so many movies, if you remove setting and character names, but just A happens, then B, the general plot points of an exceptional amount of stuff right now is the same. And as that pushes farther, we get more and more stuff that's just kind of that, you know, as you said, DP, the diarrhea.
Yeah.
Example.
Post-diarrhea.
And that's where I think the good thing, the good element of this is that the more, and we're starting to see it in what can only be described as like a vibes check, is that more and more people aren't tuning into this stuff.
Yeah.
But the more and more stuff that is genuinely creatively different or tries something different still does well.
I will raise you Andor.
Andor's
I have not seen
example.
The final three episodes, so no spoiling. But Andor is a perfect example of, I would call it a revisionist postmodern narrative, because he is borrowing from Star Wars, but not duplicating, making original decisions, mm-hmm. infusing it with an understanding of what Star Wars is, and not just Star Wars, but the idea of the Force, which is a guiding theme to Star Wars. He uses all of that, and he creates an original piece, not a Mandalorian paint by colors. Oh, you remember God. We've seen this in a few moments of Star Wars before.
You recognize this.
It was an original piece. That is an example of what postmodern or meta modernism can be.
Well, and that's also, who is he? He's a talented filmmaker yeah. who is incredibly competent, who knows the business, knows the way of all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that that therefore does well. So the good thing, I think at least, and we've been right by usually a couple of years ahead of time,
yeah.
is that we are going to start to see a shift that you cannot make $1 billion every time. So they're going to have to spend less, which means they're going to try different things.
Mid-budget.
And then things that are wildly different, you're going to start to see those ratios of it cost $10 million and it made $150 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's not billion, but that's a 10 times your investment. And that's what will keep you going. The more that this has reached a zenith, it'll eventually have to come down because it can't keep going up. And we're starting to see that vibe in general, the desire for something different. Sinners is a good example of that. Andor yes. is a good example of that. And I think we're going to see more of those things in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yep.
So here's hoping. And that's the end of this stream of consciousness, because we're late. That's how I'm going to choose to end this episode.
Is that what you want to call it?
I don't mind that.
That's I don't mind that. A stream of consciousness. Because we're just riffing.
Yeah, oh, wait, it could be that. I also liked everything but the kitchen sink.
Everything but the kitchen sink.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Musings, rhetoric. And what was the last part?
Depression.
like to know about sex change operation.
I see.
Cut. No good for sound.
Well, fucking hell, Lloyd.
Man, game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I'll be back.